Welcome to the Dastaan Goy podcast, a collective exploration of Pakistani history and culture.
In this episode of Dastaan Goy podcast, we get to sit down with Nabiha Iqbal, a musician, producer, DJ, and broadcaster from London. Nabiha has been a resident at the BBC Asian Network and BBC Radio 1 since June of 2018. She shares her stories of Karachi. She tells us about her Pakistan. She also shares the time that she spent with her grandparents during the lockdowns early this year. So without further ado, let's get straight to Nabiha.
My name is Nabiha Iqbal and I'm born and raised in London, but my family's from Pakistan, and I'm a DJ, a producer, musician and broadcaster. Yeah, just doing music full time, everything to do with music.
That's awesome. And you work with the BBC and a bunch of different entities as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I just finished a radio residency on the BBC. And then since that, I've just been covering for different people on various shows on Radio 1 and Asian Network and One Extra. And I've been doing shows on BBC World Service as well. And then I've got my own show on NTS Radio, which is an online
radio station,
yeah, based in London, which is like, I think it's been going for about 9 years now, 9 or 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And it's gained a lot of popularity around the world.
That's
and then
awesome.
Aside from that, I'm just working on my second album now, trying to get that finished and ready for a release, hopefully next year when things are better. And just various music projects.
That's awesome. Nabiha, one of the reasons I remember when we first had our call and I was thinking around the podcast with Dastaan Goy, one of the main reasons that we wanted to have this conversation was because we both found ourselves in Pakistan in around the same time. And I thought it would just be interesting and fun to kind of have a conversation around the lockdowns beginning of this year when that happened, because you were visiting Karachi at that time. I was getting married in Islamabad at that time. So I just wanted to kind of get into, I mean, you visit Pakistan very often or once every couple of years, or how often is that?
I usually go once a year and I go by myself. I've been doing it for the last few years around winter in England, which, yeah, is a good treat to get. And I just go and visit my grandparents for a couple of weeks. They live in Karachi and they're my favorite people in the whole world. So I like spending time with them.
I love it. And like, what I'd be really curious to kind of hear before the time that you spent in the lockdown in Karachi is every single time that you go, what are some of the stories that you bring back from Pakistan? What are some of the stories that your grandparents going to tell you? How do you look at Pakistan either through storytelling or the thoughts that kind of come into your mind? And does it affect your work at all and how you kind of perceive it?
I think being part of the diaspora and not, you know, having ever really lived or grown up in Pakistan, you always come back to it from quite an interesting perspective. And one thing I've really noticed is that as you get older, your whole view of the country changes. It just shifts as you grow and the more you think about your identity and who you are, and then you kind of go back and you look at things differently. And I just feel like that's part and parcel of growing up, and it's something that you're not going to think about when you're 10 years old and you just go there and get kind of bussed around all your family members. But no, I mean, I really enjoyed going, because if I didn't, then I wouldn't go. You know, there's no one forcing me to go to Pakistan. I think it's a really fascinating place in terms of, you know, from a musical perspective, for sure. I'm always making a lot of field recordings when I'm out there of different sounds and music that I come across. And I just love like the evenings and the sunrises there and all the birds, and, you know, everything is so much more intense than it is in England, in a good way and a bad way, I guess. I mean, there's some things which frustrate me about the country, I guess, partly because I haven't lived there, and, you know, things to do with women's rights and the way some females are treated out there it makes me feel quite angry sometimes, especially at the moment with what's going on with all the protests. But, you know, I think Pakistan is a country that suffers from the fact that it's painted in a very negative light most of the time in Western or, you know, international media.
Yeah.
And that's a real shame, because that's only one facet of what goes on in such a huge country with such a diverse population. So yeah, it's important to get past that and see that actually, you know, it's a country that has loads going on like any other country, and we shouldn't just dwell on like the sort of propaganda that we're fed about it.
100%. And you know, it's really interesting what you say about like being lugged around in our childhood from one family to another, because I think that really does shape our early childhood. And then as you kind of grow older, like that question of identity that you spoke about a little bit, it truly does happen. And I mean, it happened with myself as well. Like, I mean, born and raised in Dubai, but we would go back every summer. And then there's a hiatus of 10 years where I didn't go. My parents would go every summer still, or every couple of months. And now again, I'm going more and more. Every quarter I'm going there, or sometimes even more. And the perspective around what you appreciate, how you connect with the country and the people, just keeps on changing. And then for us, especially starting Dastan Goy as well, like some of the things that we knew about the place and the stories that we kind of heard about start to change. And there was, for me, it was one particular inflection point where I think my perception on Pakistan changed, which was, I was traveling the world. And like, you know, you travel to Italy, you go to Portugal, you go to the US, you go to Canada, you go anywhere else. And then you give a chance to the culture, to the people, to the places. But what I started to realize internally was, I would go back to Pakistan, but I would only kind of have I would stay with my cousins, I'd see my cousins, and I wouldn't explore the art scene. I wouldn't explore the music scene. I wouldn't explore the places that are there that are not just standard tourist places. But the inflection point was that these are all of the things that I was doing in other places. And as soon as I made that switch in Pakistan and started like getting into the car and just going alone and experiencing Pakistan the way I think for me it was meant to be experienced, it changed the world for me. Not just in terms of my identity, but also the way I looked at the country and what we wanted to do with the country, or where we wanted to kind of see it. I'd be curious if that kind of happened with you at any point.
Yeah, I 100% understand what you're saying, and it's really true. I think for me, when I was about 18 and I was in Pakistan, and I spent about three months there, which is the longest I've spent. Me and my grandfather, now he's getting a bit older, but he's as active as he can be. And we went on, we got the train from Karachi up to Rawalpindi, and then we went on a road trip up north. And it was my first time up country, you know, being in the mountains that form the Himalayas. And we went to Taxila, and we saw the Tobela Dam. And then he took me around Islamabad and Bindi and all the historical landmarks in Lahore. And you know, history is my favorite subject, so that was a really important trip for me, because that's when I started kind of paying more attention to the like richness of the heritage and the culture and just the kind of historical significance of a place like Pakistan. And yeah, I think that was probably the moment of change for me. And since then, every time I go, I'm always really fascinated by things going on there. I make an effort to go to exhibitions or art installations. And I think, you know, the internet has just played a pivotal role in all of this as well, in terms of the way we interact with Pakistan and the way we think about it. Because, you know, as a musician over the last couple of years, I've just been trying to connect with people in Pakistan who were making music, running labels, DJing, putting on parties. And once you start scratching at the surface, you realize that there's a whole vibrant, interesting music scene in all the cities, really. And that's something that I really want to explore more. And it's just a shame that I just spent 2 months in Pakistan, but because it was lockdown, I couldn't go out anywhere or meet with any of these people. But hopefully next time.
See, that's exactly what I mean. Like, there, we just, being outsiders looking in, we only scratch the surface. We see what's in mainstream media. We'll see Coke Studio. We won't see the other producers and the kids who are doing like really cool things in small little like places or in their homes or in these parties. And it's just, it's fascinating, right? Like, these are the kind of things where you see change happen. These movements happen in the UK, in Canada, in Dubai. Like, that's what kind of makes it unique. And because we're just not tapped into that. And like you said, like, as you start to scratch the surface, you start to see what's actually there. It really like blows my mind.
Because I think it's because we just, you know, we fall into the whole trap of viewing certain countries in a certain way because of how we've been conditioned. And then once you realize that's not the case, then yeah, it is mind blowing. And I've felt that, you know, I've been lucky enough to travel all around the world for music and play in so many different countries. And it's made me realize that you actually cannot make any assumptions or judgments about any country or city or whatever until you go there and you see it for yourself and you experience it. And, you know, I've had that similar kind of like flipping from one way to another, that sort of experience after playing in places like Russia and China as well. Because, again, those are two places that we hear very specific kind of coverage about. And Pakistan's the same, really. There's just there is a lot going on, and I think it's quite an exciting place because a lot of the music scene there right now is very DIY and people doing things for themselves and just kind of like, you know, putting things on because there's no real sort of party or club night infrastructure, and that makes it more exciting, you know, because everyone's just doing it for the love.
Yeah,
and I feel like in London that doesn't really exist anymore as much. So I mean, it'd be great to be able to go there and sort of document it or just spend longer and try and like immerse yourself in the music and art scenes.
The trip that you mentioned that you took with your grandfather, are there any memorable kind of stories that your grandfather told you or experiences that kind of came out that are, you know, top of mind from that particular trip?
When we went up north and then we visited my granddad's older sister in a village, and she'd actually been relocated from her old village, which was submerged in the Turbela Dam. And then my granddad started telling me about, the relocation of thousands of people when they were building that dam, and how a lot of my kind of like older relatives or ancestors' villages were all in that place and they don't even exist anymore. That made me kind of ask more questions about what life was like before in those other places. And my granddad and my grandma both told me some really interesting stories. One about like my great grandma, who I knew, she passed away a few years ago. She was quite like a hardcore lady. And then when she was growing up in her village up north in the mountains, she was quite famous because, not famous, but just like, you know, notorious, because she had her own white horse that she used to ride across the mountains and from one village to the next. And like my great great granddad taught her and her sisters all how to shoot guns and stuff, so she used to go hunting. And then my great grandma and my grandma told me as well that up there was like a secret lake where all the women used to go swimming, and it was hidden in the forest, so men didn't know about it, and then you just go there and then you could just like bathe and swim and stuff. And that just sounds so idyllic, you know. I wish I could see what that place was like. Probably doesn't exist anymore. Maybe, no, it probably does, actually. It probably does, but we'll have to find, I don't know how to find it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. That's such an amazing kind of picture to kind of, you know, get from your history. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, my great-grandma was cool. Like, you know, she had her nose pierced on both sides and in the middle, and like had a lot of the kind of heavy silver Pakistani antique jewellery. And it's such a strong look, you know. I just love it. And it would be cool to just travel back in time a bit and see. I'm sure there's still places in Pakistan where people live quite similar to that and dress in a very traditional way. But I just love all the jewelry and all the, you know, the ornaments that people decorate themselves with and their clothes with and everything like that.
When you went to Taxila, did you see the sites in Taxila, the Taxila Museum?
Yeah, we went to the Taxila Museum and then saw the archaeological sites. And again, that was something totally new to me. I had no idea that that was the place where the Buddha gave his last sermon from before dying. And that was really, and you know, however many thousands of years ago, that was one of the most important universities in the world, was situated there, and it was a real kind of center for learning, and people used to travel from really far away to come to Taxila. And yeah, I had no idea about that, so it's really interesting to learn.
It's incredible, right? Like how old civilization is when you look at Indus Valley civilization, you look at the Buddhist stupas and the relevance of that. And
Pakistan's got the most ancient, Pakistan's got the earliest remains of human civilization with, like, in Mohenjo-daro and all the Indus Valley civilization. Yeah, it's quite amazing.
And
1000 BC, I think.
Yeah, I think 5000 or 10,000, I'm not sure. And then, like, looking at it from your perspective, from music and the influence of sound, like the different kind of soundscapes in Buddhism, the different soundscapes in Hinduism, the different soundscapes in Islam, and in Christianity, and all of those kinds of the historical kind of references that are coming out and coming into the music of Pakistan, like how do you did you look into that historically? Does that affect you at all? How do you think about that?
I think what's amazing about music is that it's never ending. You know, you can never listen to all of it and you can never learn about all of it. It's just something continuous, and you delve into one certain genre or time frame, and then that can lead you down like a totally different rabbit hole. And for me, Pakistan is kind of like, I guess, one of the most vibrant places for music historically and also in the contemporary context. And I guess, you know, geographically where Pakistan is situated, over the, you know, thousands of years, people from both directions have come, and like it is like, you know, it is a crossroads for culture and different types of people. And then that's had a really profound effect on the types of music that you hear, because you could be in, I don't know, I guess like in Chitral, where all the, what are they called?
What are the people called? Oh, Chitral, I think they're Chitralis, aren't they? Kailash.
No, oh my God, I've got, Kailash, yeah, the Kailash people, yeah. Okay. So you could be in Chitral where the Kailash people live, and you know, their music is so different to what you might hear in Sindh. And at the same time, you're in that same country, but there's just so much diversity to think, to kind of like get lost in. And one thing I find really interesting about music in Islamic countries is that, you know, because of the way that Islam spread around the world and how people adopted it into their already kind of pre-existing belief system and cultures, means that you get Islamic music that takes so many forms and I don't know, like, yeah, just so many different types of Muslim music all around the world. And it's, when you go to Pakistan, it's the same. I find the music from Balochistan quite interesting, because they have a special type of trance music played by traditional instruments, and it's supposed to help like exorcise bad spirits or bad energy out of a person. And so it's associated with Islam and Sufism, but at the same time, it's also associated with like animism and spirit belief that would have obviously predated Islam, but then the two come together,
yeah,
and they make something new. And so, yeah, I find that really fascinating. And it's just like looking at music in other countries such as Indonesia as well, where, you know, they've got like their gamelan music, which is specific to Muslim celebrations, but at the same time it's also really associated with spirit belief, which predates Islam. And so, yeah, it's just like when you try and look at you know, study I guess, the humans or like the history of people through that form, you just realize that everything is so fluid and there's so much cross-pollination, and in Pakistan it's kind of unending, really.
Yeah, 100%. Now, coming to this year and the circumstances of this year that found you in Karachi, lockdown, how did you spend that time? What were some of the stories that kind of came out of that period?
Well, this year, I did not plan to be in Pakistan for 2 months, but I traveled out there at the beginning of March. It was actually an emergency because my granddad had a brain hemorrhage. And so me and my mum, we just booked tickets and we just left the next day. So it was very kind of rushed, because we just had to get there as soon as possible. And initially we only booked our tickets for 2 weeks. At the beginning, the beginning of the trip was quite stressful because it was all about just going to and from the hospital and making sure my granddad was okay. And luckily he made a full recovery and came home, and that was amazing, because I felt so stressed out before that because I just had no idea what was going to happen. And then it got to the day when me and my mum were going to fly back to London, and that was the day that the Pakistani government announced the complete lockdown. So, you know, all the airports were shut, all the roads were shut, all the trains were stopped, everything. You just couldn't even really get out of your neighborhood. So yeah, and then it was just this kind of limbo period because they'd announced the lockdown for a week or 2 weeks, but then it would get to the date where it was supposed to end, and then they just extend it, and that kept happening. For me, I've never been in a foreign country and not known when I could go home. So that was quite a strange feeling to have. And yeah, at the beginning I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? But then actually it was such a blessing in disguise to be in Pakistan because, I love my grandparents so much, and it was just nice to spend an extended period of time with them and just hang out and eat the best food I've ever eaten in my whole life, because my grandma's cooking is amazing. And me and my mum spent a lot of time going through all the old family photos on this trip because, my mum was just like, we should go through them and see what they've got. And my granddad, he was a really keen photographer when he was young. So we have so many photographs of just extended family members. And I think the oldest photo we found one photo of my great, great uncle or great-great-great-uncle, I think, who fought in the First World War as part of the British Indian Army, and he was stationed in Mesopotamia, Syria. And then my grandparents were telling me stories about the relatives that they knew about who'd all fought in World War One. I tried to get my granddad to talk to me a bit about partition, but I think that it was such a traumatic experience that people of his generation, they just don't really want to talk about it. And then that's a bit of a shame. But I did manage to actually get him to open up a little bit to me. So that was, you know, something new to learn about. And and then also, I guess, you know, the main thing that like everyone seems to know about my stay in Pakistan during lockdown was that knowledge that I was acquiring about herbal remedies. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, how every time you go back to Pakistan as you get older, you notice different things and you become interested in different things. So obviously I know that my grandparents have haldi and kalvanji and zira and all these kind of things, but I never really paid attention to them before. You know, I'd be like having a stomach ache and my grandma would be like, have some ajwain, and I would just take it. But then on this trip I don't know, for some reason my interest just got sparked in that whole realm, you know. And maybe it's got something to do with how health supplements and being healthy is trending now.
Ayurveda is the new thing these days.
Yeah, because, you know, like everyone's very sort of health conscious these days in England, you know, it's like the new thing. So maybe that had something to do with it. But then I just started, paying attention to all these traditional herbs and spices and plants that my grandparents use in everyday life. And that I just wanted to find out more. So I started speaking to them about it. I actually found out my great grandfather, so my granddad's dad, he was a Hakim and he's a herbal doctor. So I was trying to like channel some of that energy. And yeah, I just started learning about different things that they use to help them, which have really good health benefits, and kind of exploring their garden to see what they were growing.
Did your grandparents ever say like why this sudden interest? And we've been telling you this about for however long, and only now you're kind of getting into this?
They were just enthusiastic about it, I think. So especially my grandma, actually, she had this book of all the, I guess it's kind of like an encyclopedia in Urdu of all the different herbs and herbal remedies and what you use them for. So she got that book out, and then she was reading me about things, and then I had to like Google stuff. And then me and my grandma were just watching loads of YouTube videos about different things. And yeah, it was really good. So I learned a lot of new information, actually, and I've been trying to incorporate some of those good habits.
You know, what's really interesting and actually comparable to your experience, even when we were there, I mean, after the wedding, me and my dad would sit down and we'd go for a walk or we'd start talking about different medicines. And my dad's always been this, like, you know, he always has a bag full of these sketchy powders and like things that he's ground, and it's like ginger, it's ashwagandha, it's neem, and like all of these different things that he always has. And, you know, like every single day, just the other day, I was like, I don't feel very well. He's like, take this. And it's this like black powdered honey-ish kind of thing, that concoction that he kind of sits down and he makes. And I just, you know, like I'll just make fun of it and be like, what is this kind of thing that you've done? And he's like, you don't know today, but tomorrow when like you have these problems and you're fixed, and then you're going to come back to me and you can understand how important it is. This is not from our generation. It's from our generation. And he sits down, like he would sit down with me, like no joke, he would sit down with me, and he would get so excited when I would take interest in this. He'd sit down with me and he'd be like, I went to the Hakim guy and I got this ground for you. And he would have every single, he had like a big bag of like 10 boxes full of different powders. And then he'd be like, okay, what's the problem today? Is your leg hurting? Do you have arthritis? Do you have this? Do you have that? And then he would become the Hakim. He would make these things right then and there in front of me. And then he'd be like, oh, okay, you don't like the taste of this. Okay, add like 10% or one teaspoon of honey. And then you can add this. And then, and it was just like, it's incredible.
Yeah, I think I need to hang out with your dad so I can just like, you know, build on the knowledge that I already have of more herbal remedies. But yeah, once you start looking into it, it's actually crazy. And then the thing that really struck me about all of it is that how ingrained it is in Pakistani culture, because this is not something, it's not like a new trending health supplement that you just pick up at Whole Foods and because you read about it on Instagram or something like that. These are things which people have used for thousands and thousands of years. And, you know, Pakistanis, they don't think twice about using it. They know what things are for, and they know, yeah, okay, I need to have some haldi because I've got like a wound that needs healing, and I'm going to put some on there or whatever it is. And so, yeah, I mean, again, this is another, like how I was saying about, you know, like studying music from different parts of Pakistan is a really good way of sort of studying humans in Pakistan as well, you know, like human culture and anthropology.
And
I feel very strongly it's the same with when you start studying about like food and herbs and spices and all the remedies that people use in Pakistan as well.
100%. And it's really funny, right? Like when I sit down, for instance, with my mom or my dad and they're cooking, and then they start, like, they won't, like, they'll just very slightly mention, oh, we put onions, we put this. And then when you look at why they're putting those things, there's actual reasons, you know, like, oh, okay, you're getting older, you have inflammation, so they'll put more haldi, or onions do this because the meat does this to your body, and then the chemicals are cut because of the onion or the kalonji or whatever. And it's just like, it's this science that they've had that's been passed down generation to generation, and we just forget it. We're just like, oh, okay, like you're having butter chicken again, or you're having like salad and roti again. But like, we don't realize the reason behind those and how they kind of concoct themselves and kind of the artistry behind that. So it's for me, it's always interesting to sit down with mom and dad when they give their lessons about herbology.
We need to start writing them down as well so we don't forget. But yeah, it's the same with my grandma. I think she only really has like five staple ingredients that she puts in everything. Somehow she managed to make all the dishes taste different, and like it tastes like the best food I've ever eaten in my whole life. But she puts haldi in everything, you know. And over here people are like, oh, this new herb that we've discovered called turmeric, it's like the miracle root or whatever. But I mean, it's not really a new discovery from a lot of other parts of the world that have been using it for thousands of years. And I was actually in this department store day before yesterday, and they were selling a box of like turmeric haldi powder for £75. And I was thinking, if my grandma saw this now, she would just have a heart attack.
It's incredible. Nabiha, what are some of the earliest stories that you remember growing up about Pakistan?
Like some of the earliest things I remember about Pakistan, I guess one of them would have to be Bandar Ka Tamasha. Because my mum said I used to just watch it every single day. And then even on this trip, you know, they were walking down the street and my mum was like, oh, look, do you want to watch it? And I was like, no, I don't want to watch it. Now you just feel bad because it's like cruelty that those monkeys are just having to like walk with that chain around their neck and stuff. But so I think that's one of the earliest things I have. I guess food wise just like jalebi and gulab jamun and samosas and, you know, all that kind of more like junky food of Pakistan. But I love like mithai and stuff like that, I love it. And when my grandma made like akhrot ka halwa or gajar ka halwa. So a lot of the early memories are food memories. And then, probably also, just mosquitoes and things. I don't know. And I mean, when I was younger, it was just really fun because I guess, you know, I had a lot of cousins and second cousins. And then it was when everyone else was young too. So it was before people were married and had their own lives. So we just always used to hang out a lot and like stay up late and, just have a lot of fun.
For us, I mean, on the mosquito side, I would go around with a bottle of Mospel. Like that it would be like I have a utility belt and I would just pull it out and just like spray it all over me. and I agree, like growing up with cousins and everything, we'd stay up until 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, and then go for halwa puri. You know, that was the reality. That we're in Islamabad, we're gonna go to the mountain, Pir Sahaba, and have halwa puri and stuff. So I have very similar memories as well. Nabiha, last question for you. When you are in London or in England or traveling anywhere in the world and people ask you about Pakistan, how do you describe it?
I say that it's an amazing country and that they need to go and visit. but, you know, interestingly, lately I've come across quite a few people, English people, who have been to Pakistan. And I don't know why I still find that a bit of a surprise, because I guess, you know, it's not really like a tourist destination, but I've actually come across a couple of artists and one filmmaker the other day who've all traveled to Pakistan for different projects they were working on. And it was so nice to speak to them, you know, meet someone else who's been to Pakistan but who's not necessarily from there, and just speak to them about their experiences. And you know, everyone just has a lot of positive things to say. They talk about how friendly people are and how good the food is, and what an interesting place it is. Because obviously it's, you know, it's quite like overwhelming in terms of sensations. Like it's very, when you go there, there's just so much going on. So there's so much to see and hear and smell and do. And, you know, it's like, it's very intense in that way. Not like a lot of other countries. So yeah, I mean, I love Pakistan. I love going there. And I just feel like, I think it's a really good place for other people to visit, especially because of what I was saying earlier about how Pakistan's often depicted in quite a negative light. And it's not until you actually go there and see it for yourself that you realise that it's a really beautiful place full of interesting people and things going on.
Thank you so much for listening. Please follow us on Instagram and YouTube for more stories. You can get in touch with us via email contactdastangoy@gmail.com. Until next time, thank you, shukriya, meherbani, khudafiz.